The regular scheduled meeting of the Board of Zoning Appeal. Notice to the public of this meeting, the time, the date, the place, and the agenda was published as a legal notice in the Aiken Standard on August the 4th, 2015. Notices to contiguous property owners and signs were posted on the property before Tuesday, August the 4th, 2015. Notice of this meeting was also sent on August the 21st, 2015 to the city webpage for posting on the city webpage, also to the city clerk for posting on the finance and administration notice board and the municipal building notice board at least 24 hours before this meeting. Agenda sheets were mailed or emailed to interested parties. As a reminder, it is unlawful for any person giving testimony to this board knowingly providing false information. Now, that's according to Section 22-9 of the Aiken Municipal Code. Each infraction is a separate offense with a penalty of up to 30 days in jail and or a fine of $1,092.50. Those persons that wish to have a conversation with the board, we ask that you occupy the cubicle to my left. Please speak into the recording devices so that your conversation with the board can be properly recorded. Please state your name and your address. If anyone wishes to receive copies of today's hearings, you may sign up on the sign-up sheet just beyond the double doors, or you may call the planning department's office. Application 16-9001, that's the request from Generations Unlimited for an appeal of an administration decision, will not be heard tonight. That application has been withdrawn. It will not be heard tonight.
Number is that one?
That's item B, 16-90001.
Mr. Chairman, may I make a comment there?
Yes.
If there's anybody in the audience that's here for the administrative appeal on Waterloo Street, where the buses are being parked, that has been resolved, and the buses should be left from that location in 10 days. So there won't be a public hearing on that tonight.
Now, thank you,
sir.
Thank you. To the board, you have received copies of the minutes from the July 28, 2015 meeting. Are there any corrections or additions?
Mr. Chair, I'll move that they be accepted.
Second.
Nancy, second. It's been properly moved and second that the minutes from July 28, 2015 be accepted. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion show by raise of the right hand.
Yes, I
have. We have two abstaining because they were not present. The motion is carried.
Mr. Chairman, I'll pass around the orders to you, sir.
Thank you. We'll move directly into new business. I call your attention to application 16-93001. That's a variance request for 10 feet required from a 30-foot setback, and that's at 1139 York Street Northeast. To the city, has this been properly posted?
Yes, sir, it has.
Any inquiries that you wish to share with the board?
None that I'm aware of.
You have a presentation for us?
Yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
not going to play fair. This is an application from Waffle House to vary the 10 feet and required 30-foot front setback for a Waffle House at the intersection of Aldrich and York Street. It's where, if you're familiar with the location, it's where Two Fine Fellows is currently located. It is a, it's been a gas station for years, and then it was converted into a used car lot. And whenever the property was recently rezoned, there's two curb cuts here on York Street currently. As a condition of the rezoning, this from being an industrial parcel to a general business parcel, the condition from City Council was these curb cuts here be closed. And the reason that we requested that was you have this intersection here that's controlled by a red light, and then you got two curb cuts right there. You have traffic that would be coming, trying to come in this way, it'd just be a mess and wouldn't meet our traffic management orders. So in the concept, in talking with developers, we laid it out hoping to line it up with the McDonald's driveway and access the traffic light here. And this would meet our traffic management orders. They line up straight across from each other. So there's no conflicts there, and it's as far away from this intersection of traffic lights here, so people will have a chance to come out and stack and go in. On the back side here, there's an elevation drop. The I believe the applicant, he can address this better than I can. I believe they attempted to purchase some additional property back here, was unsuccessful. So when we got it, when the applicant got it laid out, to meet with this cut and the curb cut there, well, where do we put the building? And it wouldn't fit here, and it wouldn't fit here. And the back to the York Street really wouldn't work. So this was the lot side that it needed to go on. And to fit it in here and slide it back would require moving the dumpster to the front. Here, the truck can come in, dump it, and go. Now, you can move this to the back, bring the dumpster to the front, but this is the a major entryway into the city. And it would be preferable, I believe, to have it at the rear. Do you have any questions for the city?
Question to the city. What's the parking ratio for a restaurant to number of parking spaces? I know there's 26 parking spaces in this one.
One space for every three seats.
And do we know where the contamination is?
And the applicant can tell you better than I can, but I believe it's right in this area here. That's why they didn't want to move it this way. And have the building on top of it.
I'll save it for the applicant because I have a couple more questions on the contamination.
Yes.
Are there questions from the board, Pat?
Yeah, I'm a little confused with the city's description of the project description. Was this formerly two separate parcels?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay, I'll read you the second paragraph under project description. The current site current use of the property is a used car lot and contains a former service station, which is 1,305 square feet in size. It goes on, the parcel is recorded as being 0.49 acres, which is about 22,000 square feet.
Okay.
So, can you help clear up my confusion?
The current property is used as current use of the property is used car lot. It contains former service station. The RMC office is where we get this information from, and that's the information that we've got from that. The applicant can probably give you some better information there.
Is that not just the size of the service station itself, the 1,300 square feet
That's what
building?
I'm thinking.
Yes, the 1,300 square feet is the service station.
And then the whole lot's the half acre.
Right.
So the service station only occupied or used part of the lot.
Right.
Right.
The building only occupied part of the lot. The service station use was the entire lot.
So, okay, the service station building was 1,300 feet.
Correct.
Okay, the entire lot is 0.49 acres.
Yes.
Okay, and we're talking about the entire lot here.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions from the board?
Just one. Go ahead. And maybe this is better addressed to the applicant, but are you aware of any ground monitoring wells or anything like that on the site if it's got contamination on it?
No, sir.
Okay.
Question as well. The 30-foot spacing, just to be sure, that's from the street, not from the sidewalk right away, correct? Is it from the actual street itself, or does it start from the edge of the sidewalk back?
The 30-foot would start from the edge of the property line. Not street, not from the sidewalk, but where the corner pin for the property line is.
Okay, so you're back from there 30 feet. Okay.
Now, how far back that is in this particular circumstance, I'm not sure.
Did the survey of the old awning of the service station, that certainly looked inside the 30-foot thing. Would you agree with that?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it is.
Other questions from the board to the city? Thanks, Tommy.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Barr?
Good evening. My name is Butch Bauer with Waffle House, 5986 Financial Drive, Norcross, Georgia.
Mr. Bauer, you receive a copy of the staff report. Do you wish to embellish on that report or just respond to and from questions from the board?
I'll embellish just one point about how we did came up with the design for this property. You can see on the back of the building there's a walk-in cooler. I thought I had a pointer in here. There's a walk-in cooler that we rotated in a manner that we're able to... Right there, that's the cooler. Normally that would be extending out 12 feet from the back of the building. In this case, it's 8 feet out. So we rotated the cooler to try to minimize the variance request here tonight so that we could just have as little of the variance request as we possibly could. And I believe we're 20 feet from the street right-of-way, and I believe the sidewalk's probably another 5 feet wide. So you're probably about 25 or maybe 28 feet from the actual edge of pavement on York Street. But in regards to the soil contamination, there is some soil contamination in the middle of the parking lot right here that we had United Consulting do some testing on, because when we did soil borings for the building, for the foundation, they came back with some odor. So I spent another $10,000 to go a little bit further, do some more testing. And they did discover that the old tank that does have some leakage in there. DHEC's aware of it. They've opened up a new case for it. The case was closed years ago with a no further action letter, but I just spoke to the assessment division chief today. They're going to, South Carolina DHEC is going to remedy the situation. They've got their own contractors, their own criteria for removing the contaminated soil at their expense. It's part of a amnesty program back in the 70s, I believe.
That tank was removed?
Yes, sir.
When?
According to the information in the files that they had, I believe it was back in the 70s. I didn't bring the no further action letter with me that had all the specifics on when the no further action letter was issued and when the tanks were removed. But it was a long time ago, pretty good while back.
Was the excavation treated in clean fill?
Well, you never know. Unless you start digging and spending a lot more money, and with knowing that their people are going to do it that are contracted by the state, I have pretty good assurance they're going to do it right and make sure that it's done right this time. And you would think that all that those vapors would have migrated through the soils over this course of time. And of course, my big concern is, are any of those vapors going to get underneath my building slab and into the building and expose my employees to risk? So we're looking at, we've looked at it from that standpoint. Again, that's another reason why the building has to go all the way over as far as we can. We just want to get away from that area and also not put our building on top of that tank pit area. Even if it is filled properly and compacted properly, you still have some settlement issues.
You'll have no drains in that parking lot?
Storm drains? Yes, there will be some storm drains in there. If I recollect correctly, they will be coming more down this line here and then along the front, and we'll be tying into this storm drain on the adjacent property with a utility easement.
Which is where?
It's actually right in the middle of that driveway that goes to the ATM machine.
Okay, so everything's going away from the contaminated...
Everything's going that way, yes, sir.
Sir, if you... Just what the DX going to do, am I to assume that it's going to be done prior to your construction?
That's correct. Okay. Yeah, my plan is to, once we get through this process and get all of our permits approved, is to close on the property and then notify DHEC that it's available, they can have entry to the site. We may take the building down, the existing garage building there, go ahead and take that down, get that out of the way, then let them do their thing, and then give them enough time to do it right, and then we'll put it on the construction calendar. So not sure how long that's going to take. It's still something I got to work through with them. But I'm sure they probably will put some monitoring wells in there at some point. Their goal, as they told me today, was to not put any monitoring wells on a fresh asphalt parking lot that we just put money on.
Right.
So hopefully everything will work out pretty good. It wasn't a real significant contaminated issue. I will point that out, but it needs to be dealt with.
Yes, thank you.
The size of the building, this is the standard Waffle House type building?
Yes, sir.
Is not larger?
No, it's not larger. We do have a larger prototype, but it obviously wouldn't work here either.
And the contamination, it couldn't be remedied with the asphalt?
No, because it can migrate through the soil underneath the asphalt. I mean, the asphalt isn't really impervious. Rainwater will seep through asphalt eventually and weaken the integrity of the asphalt. So it's not a totally impervious surface.
But if DHEC is going to remove the contamination, the problem I had with the write-up was that I didn't see where the contamination was the problem, except that you need... That's where you have your building currently located, that you were using contamination as the excuse, and I couldn't buy that.
Well, when the report was presented to us, it was also presented to South Carolina DHEC by law. United Consulting has to give them a copy of it. And so it was their determination that in one particular spot in the middle of the parking lot, the odors were above the residential risk factor. And so in some states, they put restrictions on the land so that you can't have a daycare, adult home, or any type of living facility there. In our situation, of course, we're concerned about our employees' long-term health, but there is a vapor issue coming into the building. And United Consultant did tell me we recommend a vapor barrier for your building or removal of the contaminated soil, one or the other. So it was their recommendation that we do that, not just ours.
Other question from
the community? What's the seating capacity?
Seating capacity is 28. I'm sorry, 38.
38?
Yes, ma'am.
So why do you need 26 parking places?
Well, we're actually underparked on this particular lot because of the size of the lot. If you look at any of the other Waffle Houses we have around here, they range anywhere from 32 to 38 parking spaces. And so with 38 seats, you have 7, maybe 10 people on staff on Saturday or Sunday. We're very busy. So if you have, if you have 6 or 7 employees driving their own cars, there goes 6 spaces right there. So that only leaves 20 cars for a 38-seat restaurant.
Okay. Well, because now, is the building itself 20 feet?
The building is 25 feet wide.
No, from the property line,
yes, ma'am.
On the street, it's 20.
20 feet.
So that means then the parking places are even closer than that.
The parking spaces are probably 10 feet off the property line. There's a 10-foot landscape buffer.
Okay.
Quick question for the city. On the waste disposal, commercially, is that still just a once-a-week thing, or is that more often?
That would be up to the contract of the property owner.
Any idea what you would anticipate your restaurant generating in terms of waste removal needs?
Yeah, I'm not really sure. It depends on the volume of the restaurant. I know at least twice a week.
Okay.
And there's a grease container in the enclosure, in the dumpster enclosure, that also has to be serviced by the same contractor.
Okay. Appreciating your desire to keep that to the back of the property line, that aside, given where the curb cut off the thoroughfare is going to be there, would your preference for the restaurant be for that back corner, or would you still rather have it where it is?
Well, no, I'd rather have it where it is because the access to the dumpster, but also the access to a delivery truck coming into the parking lot.
Okay.
And backing in. I can see the delivery truck coming in, making this maneuver here, probably coming in here, and then backing up and deadheading right there so that he's got room to park and offload food product, and then not inhibiting this area here. So I see our employees probably parking back here, and this whole area being the service area.
Okay, well, you brought up a good point with the delivery. You know, obviously you have supplies and stuff like that. You know, my feeling was on a once a week, maybe twice a week waste disposal, I didn't see that as a big problem coming to the front left corner of that. But you factor in service and food supplies and other things like that. I see where you're at with that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Just one last question of the city or you, sir. I don't know who knows the answer. It's my absolute ignorance. Do we need a state approval as this is recognized a contaminated site and this is a restaurant?
Well, we need approval from the health department for a food permit. I don't think they interact with the contaminated soil issue. I don't know that has ever come up.
I don't know. I would think that if there's an issue there from the restaurant licensing in, that the two sections of DHEC will talk to one another.
Oh, I was just wondering, you know, if DHEC should be made aware before you, you know, seal it up with asphalt and start building.
Well, I think DHEC is the one doing the cleanup.
Yeah, DHEC is doing the cleanup. It'll be one of their contractors.
Okay, so they're aware of the contamination.
Yes, sir, they are aware. Okay. They have a copy of the report.
Will there be any contamination at the end after DHEC?
No. I mean, I can't speak to what the final results are going to be. Only they can do that. But I'm sure they'll be brought down below the risk level that triggered the reopening of this file.
Further questions from the board to Mr. Byron? Thank you. Do we have others to speak to the variance request? Final call, others to speak to the variance request? Seeing here and none, the chair would entertain a motion so we can enter a period of discussion.
I'd like to make a motion that application 16-93001 be approved. This is to vary the front yard setback from 30 feet to 20 feet on the property of 1139 York Street Northeast as conceptually shown in Exhibit B, and that the final order be recorded at the Aiken County RMC office.
Second.
Bud, second. It's been properly moved and second that we approve the variance application. Do we have any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of the motion show by raise of the right hand. The motion is carried unanimously. I call your attention to application 16-92001, a special exception, request for a special exception to allow the operation of a type 2 home occupational business to perform an engraving service at 426 Greenwich Drive. to the city, has this been properly posted?
Yes, it has.
Any inquiries that you wish to share with the board other than the letter, the memo that you gave us?
Only the email that we received, and that was forwarded to the board, and a hard copy was furnished here at the meeting to you.
Thank you. Presentation.
Mr. Chairman, this application is from Margaret Skidmore. She's requesting a special exception for a Type 2 home occupation where she performs an engraving service at 426 Greenwich Drive. She is currently operating there as a Type 1 home occupation. She operates it in a garage. It meets all of the guidelines for a Type 1 home occupation. The reason that you are currently being asked for a Type 2 home occupation, like I said, she complies with all of the regulations there except for one, and she wants to add another employee or part-time employee to help her. This is an engraving business that she does in a garage, and the way I understand the business plan is that she does engraves the, and talk about a niche business, is does engrave the name tags for NJROTC cadets at several schools. And of course, there's a busy time of the year for, and then there's some slack times of the year for. And there's that one comment that we received that forwarded to you. Other than that, we haven't received any. She's required to meet all the requirements of the Type 1 home occupation, Type 2 home occupation. Basically, ride by there, it looks like a house, it acts like a house. That has to be her primary place of residence. She lives there. Not more than 25% of the floor area of the building can be used for commercial, for the business portion. And she's complying with all of that. The one question staff had was about deliveries, as whether there be UPS pickups and deliveries of equipment and that type of thing. And the response that we got back was that she takes all of that stuff to ship it, and she doesn't have any deliveries there at the house.
Questions to the city from the board? As a Type 1 is like music and music teachers and the like.
Type 1 can be most anything, but a Type 1 is you don't have people coming and going from the house, and it's only operated by people that reside in the house. A Type 2 home occupation, you can have one person that does not reside in the house employed. A Type 2, typically what the board has seen in the past for Type 2 is a beauty salon. And it can come and go in, and I think you had one several years back for a tax service as well. This one's a little bit different because you're really not talking about the coming and going. It's the additional employee. And one of the other things that we had talked to her about was adequate parking for that employee. it appears that can be taken care of on the site.
And how long has she had the type 1 business?
She came in shortly, I want to say July, in that time frame, to get the business license.
For type 1?
For, we could not license her for type 2. So we licensed her for type 1 so she could get started. And then she came forward for the type 2.
Now, there would be no signs since she advertised her business and generated her business through the Internet.
Right. Correct.
But under type 2, she is allowed a sign.
She is allowed a small wall-mounted sign. And I forget what the square footage is. Off.
1.5.
Yeah, 1.5 square feet. So that's the same size as the under canopy size signs down here on Lawrence Street. So, yes, she could have a sign that size. But not a freestanding sign.
Wall-mounted.
Right.
And the whole reason she needs this is because she's had additional work and is now needing to hire an employee.
Definitely.
And this variance is for this property only?
Now, this isn't a variance. This is a special exception.
I'm sorry.
And it's for this applicant for this property.
Not the whole neighborhood.
Not the whole neighborhood. This is not a rezoning. This is for this specific business plan at this specific location for this specific person. If she hires another person, then she would no longer be a type 2 home occupation, and you know, she'd need to relocate to a commercial location.
Good.
Tommy, in the email from apparently one of the neighbors, they mention a agreement with the River Bluff Homeowners Association at the purchase of the home that states that all lots shall be only used for residential purposes. Have you done any research, or are you aware of that in the covenants, or that covenant restriction?
I actually hope looked that up for me this afternoon. And in the covenants, it says no lot should be used except for residential purposes. No residence shall be erected, altered, placed, or permitted to remain on any lot other than one single-family dwelling of not more than 2.5 stories in height, and a private garage of not more than 2 automobiles, and other buildings strictly incident to residential use. Now, a type 2 home occupation or a home occupation from the zoning ordinance is a residential use.
Okay.
Because if it's not your residence, then you can't, you know, it's not a home occupation.
We're not a covenant enforcement body either.
And then there was, in the covenants, there was not also a section that says the obnoxious or offensive trade or activity shall be carried on upon any lot, nor shall anything be done thereon which may be or become an annoyance or nuisance to the neighborhood. Well, if that starts to happen, that's one of the conditions of a home occupation. If that starts to happen, then she's in violation of the home occupation section of the zoning ordinance, which puts her in violation of the ordinance.
Okay.
And I would say this about the covenants. There's a whole lot of type 1 home occupations in River Bluff.
And wouldn't the covenant cover anything that, I mean, they would have first priority as to what goes on in there. Isn't that correct?
They're separate and distinct from us.
That's what I mean. So, because it's their neighborhood, they would be able to take care of anything there that needed to be.
Yes, ma'am.
I know that approval of this doesn't warrant other people to do something like this, but are there other type 2 home occupations in River Bluff?
I can remember, and this is probably 10 years ago, that we approved one for a pest control company in River Bluff. And the gentleman actually stored the chemicals at his house, the truck, extra truck for the employee. The employee came there every day. And there was no objection from the Homeowners Association for that one. Now, I don't know if that home occupation is still, if he's still at that location or if he's grown out of there, but I haven't received any complaints about it.
Any further questions to the city from the board? Thanks, Tommy. Skip Moore.
Margaret Skip Moore, 426 Greenwich Drive, Aiken.
Could you speak a little louder, please? Maybe closer to the microphone.
Okay. Margaret Skidmore, 426 Greenwich Drive in Aiken, South Carolina, 29803.
Excuse me. Do you wish to embellish the staff report or just respond to and from questions from the board?
Just respond.
Board from any board has questions for Ms. Skidmore?
Back.
Here. Could you describe your business process and what you, where in your home you do these different things?
Sure. I have an office, a small office space inside the home where I receive emails and phone calls and things like that. After that, we process the orders and send them over via email. We pick them up in the garage through a computer in there, and they just get fed to the...
This is all done on the internet?
Yeah, yes. And then it gets fed to an engraver, which...
Okay. What kind of orders are these?
I'm sorry?
What kind of orders?
They're from JROTC units, from high schools, different, all kinds of different JROTC. I just handle the production.
My understanding is you do engraving.
Yes.
Engraving of what?
JROTC name tags.
I'm sorry?
Name tags.
Name tags?
Yes.
Okay. For pets?
No.
No. No.
JROTC units.
Junior
ROTC. Name tags. They're Army, Navy, Air Force units.
Okay.
All of your orders are, in other words, this whole business is internet-based, and then nobody would come to your home to look at what you do, to place orders. It's all over the internet.
It is.
And then when it's time to mail the orders out, you drive them yourself to the...
Morale station. That's where I go.
So there would be absolutely no traffic other than your one employee driving to your house.
Right.
Now, when you get an order, you actually produce the name tag in the garage?
Yes. Well, I process them in the home, or, you know, as far as getting them in a format that our machines can carry, then I send it over in an email so that we can pick them up in the computer out in the garage, and then those are specifically feeding the machines to engrave the names.
What type of material do you do this engraving on?
Plastic, for the most part. We do carry an aluminum tag for our Air Force units. It's a dress, they call it dress metal, but it's aluminum.
Okay, and this is an etching operation?
It's a,
is it like
they're
this?
They're rotary engravers.
I'm sorry?
They're rotary engravers. So
okay, like a router.
They spin and then they cut.
They're
etch
a smaller
out.
Router? They're etched in?
They're etched in, yes.
Okay, and there's no acid etching, or it's all mechanical?
No, all the plastic shavings and things are caught up in a vacuum, and which, you know, we have a bag for that, and we dispose of it.
And no thermal processes?
No. No, we don't produce the name tag itself, we cut them.
Okay, is there a painting operation?
We do paint the Air Force dress with their blue, but I don't know. If you have a specific question about that, I can...
And then
we hand paint them. So.
Okay, so when the name tag is produced, you mail them out, parcel post or UPS or what?
Yeah, we go to the post office, USPS.
Okay, and you need a second person to help you?
In the fall, I do.
Only in the fall?
Only in the fall.
This is...
When all the high schools start up, and when spring, you know, we get another surge, but I can handle that myself.
So this is because you get an increase in orders, and rather than turn down the orders because you don't have the capacity to do it by yourself, you need a second person.
Right. About 6 to 8 weeks. The volume is very high. Very high, but we want to keep our customers. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, Ms. Skidmore, as it relates to the noise, I see your summation that you feel it's done in an insulated... Is this in the garage?
Yes, it is.
When you say insulated, you mean just fiberglass batting and behind walls? Or is your garage door insulated? I'm sure that's kept down. They're non-insulated door. I mean, you start engraving metal and stuff like that, I'm assuming it can generate some noise.
Some noise, yes. The garage door is insulated and closed in. And, you know, the normal insulation for the outside of the garage.
Okay, so, but your check on this is just your own observation outside your house while this is going on, or?
Well, I specifically, you know, made sure that we did provide insulation for the door instead of just closing it in. I'm just assuming that the integrity of the original insulation on the outside, which I know is not a whole lot in the floor garage, but I'm assuming the integrity of that is fine.
As I said, a non-insulated garage door or non-insulated outside wall to a garage, non-living space, can be pretty taking me out of the void there. So I'm no expert on engraving, but anything that's, when you mentioned you had a metal application to this, just some concern over decibels and all that. And if you ever had anything formally done to measure that or do...
We have not.
Okay. Now, have you had any complaints?
Work in there at the time without earplugs, so it's not...
That was going to be my next question. Is it loud enough that you would use earplugs while you're in there? Okay.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been handling production. It's actually my dad's business, and it's based... His home base is California. I've been handling production for about 7 years now. I just moved into the River Bluff community in June. And so I applied for the business license in July, and now we're really working, so I'm applying for a special exception.
The only difference then, you've had this operation going on since July of last year. Is that right? Your business started in your home, type 1 business, started when again, in July of this?
Yes, that's where I got, that's when I got.
You cranked up.
Yeah.
Started in July. And so now it's, okay, so you've been there about, been doing this engraving in that location, in that garage for the last 30 days or so. Is that right?
We are not. I'm not going to say that I did not engrave any name tags, but the volume in the summer, I have pretty much summers off. I go on a school schedule.
Okay.
So summer leadership camps and stuff like that, but that usually is handled in May, so there was not any, and I was not aware. This is the first time I've lived in the city.
Okay. And the only difference is you're adding a person for about 8 weeks. Other than that,
we handle it in him.
Okay.
Yeah.
The parking of that one person in the driveway on the street, does it create any kind of impedance to other traffic flow?
No, it shouldn't. And I actually, when I wrote that I had 3 children in the home driving, now I only have 2, so we'll have 3 cars with the person coming. So I have plenty of parking space.
In your driveway?
Yes, in my driveway.
Yep. One more question. If we approve this, you would go ahead and hire somebody for a month or two each fall. Is that correct?
I don't know if I have to reapply every year or not, but yes, that's what I would do. If the business gets any larger, I will move the business out of my home.
So if this results in an increase in business, you'd use this person for more than just a month or two? Is that what you're saying?
No. I only need to hire someone for about 30 hours a week for about 6, 8, 10 weeks, something like that. It's pretty much through December and the beginning of October. And then we handle it. The volume is low enough that I can handle it myself the rest of the year and the beginning of the next.
Well, if we were to approve this only with that limitation, that would be okay with you?
Sure. That would be fine.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have further questions from the board for Ms. Skidmore? Thank you. Do we have others to speak to the special exception request?
Hi. My name is Matthew Golden. I live at 219 Suffolk Drive in River Bluff. I'm the president of the River Bluff Homeowners Association. Just wanted to make a couple of comments. Thank Mr. Paradise for reading that section of our restrictive covenants, which specifically state that all lots and residences in River Bluff are strictly for residential use only. I realize, as you stated, that it's not your duty or intention to enforce our covenants. However, it is mine. Therefore, I have to come and voice the opinions that were given to me by other residents of the HOA. Obviously, we have had a couple of residents complain, and one of the complaints was that there have been notices, people have noticing large, you know, frequent UPS and FedEx deliveries to the residents. I don't necessarily think that's the worst thing in the world. However, those trucks do tend to speed through the neighborhood, just like everybody else. We also have considered the possibility of allowing Ms. Skidmore to propose an amendment to the restrictive covenants that would allow for a Type 2 home-occupied business. The HOA has a meeting scheduled for September 27th, and we would invite for her to propose an amendment to the covenants at that meeting, which can be voted on. And we just ask if the zoning board would defer their decision until the River Bluff HOA has had time to make that decision.
Questions? Ben?
Under your current covenants, without the amendment, do you consider the applicant's home occupation in violation of the covenants?
Yes. Yes, sir.
And you plan to enforce the covenants to restrict her by civil action, if necessary, from continuing her business home occupation?
We are charged with that in the covenants. However, we have made exceptions to allow Type 1, not Type 2, home-occupied businesses in the neighborhood. So this sort of is a new thing, and we don't have a precedent in the neighborhood for this. So we generally would allow the HOA to decide, if that makes sense and answers your question.
Well, you're aware that the only enforcement you have would be through civil action.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Other question from the board?
Yeah. Brendan? Other than the violation of the language of the covenant, have there been homeowners to complain about any other, nuisance as it relates to sound? You mentioned traffic. Is that a hypothetical, or you said someone has complained about the excess traffic?
Someone has complained about excess traffic. Yes, sir. It was actually another board member who's not present today because he was had an alternate, he couldn't make it. However,
any other nuisance activity?
Well, as I was going to say, as Ms. Skidmore stated herself, that she just moved into the neighborhood in June, just started up in July. I don't know that there's actually been enough time or enough production activities that have occurred to, you know, really test.
Okay. Thank you.
Other questions from the board?
I guess I just want to ask him, if this board did approve this, then it would be up to y'all if you wanted to do something to prevent that from happening. Not up to us to enforce your covenants. It would be up to you if that's what your community decided to do.
Correct.
Okay, just wanted to make sure you understood that.
Again, I was asked by the Homeowners Association to come and voice our concerns.
You said that there have been complaints. The sign went up and people in the neighborhood got letters. Could you tell me how many different people, how many complaints you received, calls or letters or anything?
There have been two that I'm aware of. One of which is a person who lives in an adjacent lot.
Do you know if anybody, well, we'll find out in a minute if anybody else is here. Okay.
Any further questions for Mr. Gold? Thank you.
Thanks.
Do we have others to speak to the special exception?
My name is Philip Mason. I live on 23 Suffolk Drive. I'm also on the HOA. I would just like to add one small thing, and that is in regards to the neighborhood, the parking, and the driving. The neighborhood was designed in such a way that the road is very narrow, and they did that to try to limit curbside parking and to also has many turns. And the idea there was to try to make people slow down and make it a safe neighborhood for the kids to play. Well, what has happened, though, is people just drive as people drive, and we drive too quickly in general. This home in particular is interesting because it lives on a steep hill, and so there is very little actual parking, and the parking would have to occur in the street, and the streets are narrow, and there are lots of children. These are concerns that we have as well. The other item is just the fact that, yes, there is that in the covenants it specifically says not to. And again, this isn't your area to enforce, but it is ours. And this homeowner bought the home knowing that this was in the covenants, and now she is trying to make a change to her business. And that just seems a little disingenuous in the purchase of in the home. That complaint has been made to us by has been made to me by an additional person who I don't think Matt was talking about. So that's all I have to add, unless y'all have questions for me.
Question from the board to Mr. Mason.
I noticed in going through your neighborhood, it's nicely maintained, it's nicely done. There's quite a variety of situations in regard to car parking and car storage.
Correct.
Some carports, single carports, double carports, single garages, double garages, and no garages. Now, the applicant has three vehicles, according to the statement in the application. Is this, do you consider this a problem, having another worker?
To be perfectly blunt, this is something, our HOA had some embezzlement a few years ago. We prosecuted it, and many of the problems that we're dealing with are because of lapsed HOA members doing their job and enforcing various covenants. We're in the process of trying to clean up many of these things, parking being one of them, businesses and so forth being others. There's a number of these things that are in the process that are actually happening, and have been happening within the last year. We're also already, not because of this, but coincidentally, we're in the process of updating our covenants in general, trying to get these things amended. So, yes, we are worried about this, about the parking problems, because we have people who are parking on the wrong side of the street. We have a couple folks who have cars that they don't drive, but once or twice a year. And these are all issues that we're trying to address through our covenants, and we are concerned about additional parking then. As I aforementioned, the curves and things make it difficult for cars to see, and with the children playing, there, we don't have a sidewalk. We are really trying to get people to not park on the roads whatsoever. As I said, she is on a hill, on a very steep hill at that. So, yes, this is a concern.
I ask you this because, as you've recognized, vehicle traffic is a concern, part of the one of the criteria, but I consider parking part of the vehicle traffic situation. And the applicant does use the garage for the business, and I assume it's not available for car parking.
That is correct. At least I'm assuming that from the outside as well. I just imagine it's probably not large enough. But this is something that we are frustrated about in general, is that people parking on lawns and so forth. These are questions we are trying to arrange. And so while it seems unfair that we're attacking this one woman, that's not necessarily the case at all. We're really trying to create a stronghold that these covenants do matter and they do apply.
So your covenants include non-parking on grass?
They do not, and that is one of the things that we are revising. As I said, we are in the process of this, of working with a lawyer right now to update some of these covenants and so forth. And that was one of the things we are discussing.
Thank you.
Is how to handle issues with parking and so forth.
Does the board have additional questions for Mr. Mason? Thank you.
Thank you.
Do we have others to speak to the special exception request? Final call. Others to speak to the special exception request? Seeing, hearing none, the chair would entertain a motion so we can enter a period of discussion.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to make a motion. I'd like to make a motion to continue this to the until after the HOA has an opportunity to review altering their covenants to allow consideration for this type 2 business. My inclination without that is to make a motion to deny this for several reasons. Number one, I think it's inconsistent with criteria number 4, that's compatibility with adjacent uses and other properties nearby. Also, I think it's a problem as far as criteria number 5 and the generation of vehicle traffic, but more the parking rather than traffic. The other situation in my mind is the fact that we'd be approving this solely for the purpose of allowing the business to prosper economically. And that's, according to the state statute and rulings, inconsistent with the consideration we should be making. And that's approving a variance or a special exception to improve the economic use of the property by the applicant. So my motion is to continue this.
Do we have a second?
I'll second that.
Properly moved and second that we continue this application to a later date. Do you have a time frame? After September?
I'd say 60 days. That should be enough, give the HOA enough time. I'd hate to turn it down and then have the HOA go ahead and change their covenant so they'd allow this. And then the applicant would be restricted from coming back to us for a year.
Would that be for the October meeting?
Yes.
The only thing about that is this. If she remains a type 1 business, she's legal.
It's up to their HOA to stop her.
And there are numbers.
We have a motion, and we have not gone into discussion yet. I'm about to go into discussion.
Sorry.
Thank you. It's been properly moved and seconded that we continue. Now, discussion.
My same statement is, if she can continue the business as long as it's type 1, and she doesn't need another, she doesn't use another employee. So.
In which case, I think we've done our job, and if the HOA makes civil action to stop her type 1 business, that's at their discretion.
But our only job is to make sure that you meet the criteria for a special exception.
We have nothing to do with the HOA, right?
Right.
Okay.
Well, I think to Pat's purpose, you know, in terms of meeting the criteria, my hang-up is number 2 as well. So if we're looking for a means to continue based on criteria fit, I also have some questions around it being consistent with the character and purpose statement of the residential multifamily low-density zoning district. And by that, I encompass their own HOA into that, to be honest with you.
Do we have any further discussion? Those in favor of the motion, should I raise their right hand? Those opposed? The motion is carried, and the vote is 6-1. Staff, would you work out the mechanism for the continuance?
Yes.
Thank you. I call your attention to application 16-92002, another request for a special exception to allow construction of a multifamily development at 881 Lawrence Street. To the city, has this been properly posted?
Yes, sir, it has.
Any inquiries that you wish to share with the board?
Yes, sir. There was one email that I received today with some photographs. That was forwarded to y'all, and hard copies were placed at your desk.
Thank you. Presentation.
From Keaton Patel for a special exception to allow the construction of multifamily development at 881 Lawrence Street. Property is zoned in general business, and the proposed development will contain 2 buildings. Each building will be 3 stories in height with a parking lot in the center as depicted on the site plan. Access to the parking lot will be provided by a curb cut on Lawrence Street. The maximum number of allowed dwelling units on the lot would be 23. Each of the 2 buildings will have a footprint that is approximately 100 feet by 60 feet. The proposed plan also contains a detention pond and provides open space between Lawrence Street and the apartment building. The current lot is about 1.58 acres, and the lot is currently undeveloped. To the rear is multifamily here. Single family here, undeveloped, and a water tank over here, and single family over here. The you might think it's a little strange, the number 23 dwelling units rather than 24, and that's because you have to have, I think it's 3,500 square feet. Anyway, in the GB per dwelling unit, and the dwelling unit size is maxed out at 23 for the 1.58 parcel. So even though you could, construction type would have that other apartment in there, that it could not be used as a dwelling unit. The comprehensive plan calls for this particular area to be single-family, even though that there is an apartment complex behind it there. And any questions for the city?
Okay. Yeah, I got a question. I'm totally confused. I'm looking at Exhibit C, which I've got to admit, I can't read with a magnifying glass. But it says unit mix, 40 total. Now, two-bedroom units, 16 total, three-bedroom units, a total of 56 units.
And that is Glen Arbor Apartments, which is the apartment complex behind it. That was for information for the apartment complex behind it.
So that's not this project?
That's not this project.
Okay, this project is 23 units. How many bedrooms?
I don't know.
Okay. Would this be considered high residential density? High or low?
High.
Density. High. Okay, so this would basically, as far as use, be a MRH. Is that correct?
MRH.
Multifamily. Residential, high density.
Well, it's zoned general business, but yeah, it would be a high density.
But that's basically what we'd be approving as far as use. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for the city?
This thing on Glen Arbor, is that on, what does Glen Arbor face?
Glen Arbor comes in off of Lincoln Avenue.
It's a cul-de-sac behind it.
Okay.
So it's not a cul-de-sac, it's a circle.
A circle, yeah.
Other questions to the city?
There is another multi-housing unit closer towards, more across from the...
retirement home?
Yeah.
Right. That would be Cushman Arms Apartments. And my understanding is that's owned by the same person that's talking about doing this development.
Okay. Thank you.
That's the one to the south, going down
towards
the
town?
Yeah.
It would be on the northwest corner of Cushman and Lawrence.
So this would then be the third, if you count Glen Arbor, which is technically behind it. There would be two on the frontage there on that same side.
Yes.
Within a quarter of a mile of each other.
Yes.
Okay.
We have further questions to the city. Thank you. Thanks, Tommy. Mr. Patel?
Oh, one other question for the city. I'm sorry. Glen Arbor, if I looked at the zoning map, showed MRL.
I think it's RML, Residential Multifamily Low
Okay.
Density.
RML, okay. And that would include what you're now saying is this Glen Arbor, which is 40 two-bedroom units and 16 three-bedroom units.
Right.
But that's considered low density.
Well, and whenever I call it high density for this project, it's because you've maxed the density out. It's actually a general business. It's the zoning district. Whereas RMH and RML are zoning districts, as you're referring to. And RML, you need 3,500 square feet for a per dwelling unit. RMH, high density, you need 2,500 square feet per dwelling unit. When you go to the general business, it's 3,000 square feet per dwelling unit.
So it really splits the difference
between the residential multifamily low density and the residential multifamily high density. But based on your question, I call it high density because in reference to he's maxed the density out. If he wanted to add another dwelling unit there, he could.
I couldn't find that in the zoning ordinances.
Okay, that's in the non-residential design guidelines, 4.3.1 and 4.2.1 in the chart, down at the bottom.
for your comments.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tommy. Is Mr. Patel here, our representative? Not notified?
He was notified.
And without anyone being present, we can't continue this hearing. At this point, I'm going to call for a 10-minute recess.
I apologize. I thought he had somebody here.